call the meeting to order. We have a roll call.
Commissioner Sinapa?
Here.
Commissioner Geary?
Here.
Commissioner Anderson?
Here.
Commissioner Blackburn?
Here.
Commissioner Taggart?
Here.
And Supervisor Perez?
Not here. Okay. Next, approval of a summary of proceedings for March 20th regular meeting. We approved that already, didn't we?
March 20th,
we approved.
Are you looking at the agenda?
Oh, I'm looking at, sorry. I didn't have my glasses on. Okay. So the April 17th. Okay. Do I have a motion?
The only thing that I see since I was not here is that I said something. It's under commissioner reports. Heard from Commissioner Geary regarding him setting up a ride along with the ACO.
It should have been Blackburn. But yeah, I wasn't here either, though.
Okay. Got it.
Okay. All right. So we have any other corrections? All right. So if we can have a motion to approve as corrected.
I make a motion to approve as corrected.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Consent agenda, we have nothing. Next, we have public presentations. This portion of the meeting is reserved for persons to address the commission on any matter not on this agenda, but under the jurisdiction of the commission. Commissioners may respond briefly to statements made or questions posed. They may ask a question for clarification, make a referral to staff for factual information, or request staff to report back to the commission at a later meeting. Also, the commission may act to direct the staff to place a matter of business on a future agenda. Please, do we have a podium? Come up to the podium. State your name and your address for the record before making your presentation. Speakers are limited to 2 minutes. And if I can ask, remind everybody to go ahead and turn their phones down off so that it's not disturbing the meeting. All right, so we'll start with the first table. Jump, anything? Okay, second table.
Might adjust the microphone. Move it up so we can hear it. I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
My name is Angela Perdicas, and I just wanted to follow up. It's been a year.
Address? I'm sorry. Address?
93312.
Thank you.
I just wanted to follow up on it's been almost a year since we had formed the subcommittee. And yeah, I haven't seen any progress, I guess, and would like to see if I can get a status update on some of the things that were supposed to be addressed for the subcommittee. Some of the things are about ordinance changes, and some of the things Nick was working on the CAFP, and some of the livestock increased licensing fee for unaltered dogs, mandate altered dogs found off property, tethering, number of dogs, increase in the sales, and just that whole list that was addressed to the committee.
There will be an update at the appropriate time that the subcommittee is on the agenda.
Okay, so we have not finalized anything on this list as to date?
No, we have a meeting every month, mm-hmm. and most of those items that you talked about have been being worked on.
Okay.
But nothing more.
So, yes, that's something that to be discussed during that particular portion.
Okay, oh, great. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you. Anybody else on the second table?
Angela, do you mind spelling your last name for me?
P-E-R-D-I-K-I-S.
Thank you.
Almost had it.
The pain in your side is back. Susan Richardson, 93306, the infamous Northeast. And yeah, I'm back just to reiterate and kind of talk about kind of issue with treating ringworm again and to again hopefully encourage that there is going to be some discussion starting between you guys and the board of supervisors about how to help the county facilitate that, because as you know right now, they don't really have the ability or the space to treat that, so they don't have somebody to take it home like I have and treat them at home, then you know, the dog gets put down, which is unfortunate if it's healthy otherwise, you know. But I also want to say that the little dog that I did foster this last time that had the ringworm, and he was also deformed, got adopted.
Oh, it's not by you.
No. No, I think I'm at my limit. The cat might come after me if I go over my limit.
All right.
Anyhow, I just want to make sure I will be reminding you guys, because I know we're coming up quick on the no-kill curve, so we really got to start figuring out how we're going to help that shelter expand or whatever it is that they need to deal with that. And even some of the parvo distemper dogs that can be treated, but if they don't have space, like, what are you going to do? So I think that's an issue that's... needs to be addressed and make sure that they have the resources and ability to, you know, for them not be in the center. I don't think a healthy dog that on some of the treatment shouldn't be in the center.
You're
fine.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. I have a question for Nick, just
quickly. Yeah.
Is it a matter of space?
For the
quarantine specifically for a ringworm. I know you have a quarantine.
So it's a complicated answer. It's always a problem of space for any animal, healthy or sick. But the ringworm sort of conundrum is more of a zoonotic illness concern. And that, you know, decent isolation to keep it from spreading from animal to human is more of the concern. We have had, and actually technically still do have, a parvo isolation area that we've carved out of the shelter, which we've had some success with, but we just don't have the ability to keep ringworm animals in the shelter without, you know, risking the spread of the illness to people.
If you have a private citizen that is willing to foster to deal with that, is that a policy that can be made, or is there an issue against that?
Yeah, actually, Susan has one.
Done. Yes. Right.
Yeah, the difficulty is getting a foster parent who's willing to take on it. Yeah.
That has the basis.
So I don't know, maybe more awareness out in the community, because, I mean, I don't mind it. Ringworm does not scare me at all, you know, and I really think, again, some of the discussion needs to be how can the shelter treat, because, I mean, if I'm the only one in this whole county, you know, and I can only pick so many dogs, you know, then it still is the problem in, okay, you get another one in and I'm really maxed out or whatever, then what happens?
Right.
You know,
do you have ringworm? Is it a major problem or just a infrequent?
In dogs,
I haven't seen ringworm in forever. On clients' dogs and stuff.
In dogs, it's not very common that we see in the shelter, but I think we talked about this last time, that we see it more in cats, just because it's more easily recognizable.
Right.
But we don't see it very often in dogs. But I think the more pressing issue is that it's an easily treatable illness.
Right, exactly.
You know, the dogs that do have it that are adoptable, if you have an easily treatable illness, you just need a foster home for it or a true isolation ward, then, you know, it's tough to justify having to put an animal down that has just a easily treatable illness.
So in a perfect world, if you had like a trailer that was a isolation kennel specifically for something like ringworm, I know it's going to take a while for the animal to get better, but if there was something like that, would that be doable?
Yes, any true isolation area that, of course, has our veterinarian stamp of approval would be completely appropriate to isolate a ringworm dog.
When it's a cat, because you see it more often with cats, what's the usual protocol?
It's the same protocol, unless we have a foster.
Unless we have a foster, then that's usually...
Yeah, the difference is for some reason we have a lot more foster parents willing to take on cats than we do dogs. So sort of the pool is, we have more of pool to choose from of foster parents who might be willing to
How
treat.
How many active foster parents do you have?
Roughly 70 families.
Okay. And
including Susan.
Besides Susan, has there been folks that have reached out to you about ringworm or any fosters that have taken on a dog like within the last year and a half that had ringworm or cat?
So are there people who have reached out to us to foster ringworm-specific dogs?
Or has there anybody, like, has anyone taken on a dog that has ringworm besides Susan?
I'm sure there have been. I can't think of any specifically off the top of my head. I mean, we've probably only had, I mean, I'm just taking a guess, maybe 10 or 15 dogs in the shelter that have been diagnosed with, over the last year or so, with ringworm.
Would there be a possibility of, like, creating a list of folks that would be willing to, like, maybe sending out an email to all the fosters, asking them if that situation were to arise, if they would be willing to take care of a dog that does have ringworm? Explaining that it's a zoonotic disease and that, you know.
Yes.
Is that possible?
Yes, that's possible.
But the bigger problem is cats, isn't it?
With ringworm?
Yeah.
Like I said, it's more easily recognizable in a cat, so we see it more commonly. Plus, it's the natural sort of physical behavior of a cat lends itself to spreading amongst cats. It's much more prevalent. We see it much more often in cats. Yeah. That's not to say that it doesn't happen as often in dogs. We just don't see it as often, yeah. Or catch it. But we typically, what we have is we have people that will reach out to us for foster and say, we want to foster a special needs animal or an animal that needs additional care. And those are the times that we'll reach out to them and say, we have a dog that's recovering from surgery. We have a dog that has this, that, or the other, distemper or parvo or whatever the case may be. And we'll offer the animals to those foster parents in those cases. But those other illnesses we see much more commonly than we do ringworm and dog.
Is it usually so you do make those efforts to reach out to those folks when a dog?
Anytime we have an animal with an illness, we reach out to as many fosters or rescues as we can.
Okay, thanks.
I think there's also a sort of an erroneous fear of ringworm that once you tell somebody you can catch it, they think they're going to get cooties. So.
And really, if you follow and the protocol and stuff.
Oh, like
I had that dog that went out for 3 weeks. I have dogs. You know, I've got the little people lives in my house, and nobody caught ringworm.
Would it... And I don't want to put too much on our vet, but would it behoove us to maybe create some kind of an educational pamphlet or letter about zoonotic and contagious diseases and you know that we're looking, you know, something that we could in asking fosters, you know, we need fosters for these special circumstances, you know, and have a little box that they'll check that they're willing to do it kind of thing. I mean,
absolutely, everything's on the table. Just keep in mind that we have perfectly healthy dogs
that
we're constantly trying to seek foster for.
Right.
So we tend to prioritize things, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
But yeah, absolutely. We can consider something like that sort of informational to curb any notions that it's a deadly disease or something.
Right.
Like that.
Yeah, I think a lot of it's an educational issue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
can I
put
another one more question for Nick?
Excuse me?
Can I have something really quick?
Sure.
Felines. A long time ago, when I had money, I would have bought myself a nice fancy Somali at a breeder, a beautiful place and all clean and nice. And I knew nothing about feline infectious periodontitis. Okay, this was a very expensive cat. And after 2 years, I got another kitten, and apparently it triggered it. Nobody knows. And so he came down with it. He got shocked. His system got shocked, and he developed all the symptoms of FIP, the wet form. And at that time, I didn't know anything about it, so I took him to a vet, on Mount Vernon. And they did not know how to diagnose it. They couldn't even understand the symptoms they were looking at. But later on, I got some blood results. I sent it to a vet that deals with felines, and she said, yes, FIP. Turned out was the deal. The thing is that FIP, how do you screen for that? Because that is 100% deadly and infectious. What do you do about that?
We do not test for FIP. I mean, we take in somewhere around 7,500 cats a year.
Yeah.
There's just no way we could test them all.
Pardon me. Can you state your name for the record,
I'm
please?
I'm sorry, Janie Siever.
Thank you.
Well, like I said, then, you know, I got well. I mean, the latest cat I got from the alcove, and he's beautiful, happy and fine and sturdy. And, you know, but the FIP thing was definitely an education. You know, and I figured it's something that... It hides maybe it's a perfectly healthy cat, and then all of a sudden it gets triggered, and then they just go right down. Mm-hmm. There's no cure for it.
Nope, there is not.
I just wanted a question. I don't know, I can't remember what I asked you or not. As far as your staff goes, are any of them able to, or is there anything to prevent them in your policies, whatever, prevent them from taking the dog when there's ringworm or something like that? And, or have you asked any of them that?
On a foster?
Yeah.
Most of our foster families are staff members. So, yes.
Okay, so still, if they want to take home their dog every kid,
yes.
Could they? Have you asked any of them? I know there's one that wouldn't, and to me, that's a personal decision anyhow, but I didn't know if there's anything to prevent your staff from, you know, like policy or whatever.
No, no. We encourage it.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Okay, we had some latecomers. Do we have anybody in the back? Public presentation? Maybe, Terry? Okay, if you could please come up to the mic and identify yourself and your address.
Jenny Seeger, 7000 College Avenue, number 70, Bakersfield.
Is that 06, 05?
Oh, 06. So this is an idea I've been thinking about for quite a while now. And, lately, this is a good example for lately. I was at the market with this gorgeous husky and was running around frantic, and everybody at the market said they'd been trying to get him for 3 days, and the poor thing was just exhausted and beautiful. And so there was a shopper in there that had some type of intelligence information about where the dog might live, what street. So I went to the street and I did my little investigation thing, and lo and behold, I found out where the house was, where the owners lived. So I waited for the owner to return home, and she said, well, I go to work every day. Yes, he gets out every day. Well, what am I supposed to do about it? What an attitude. She didn't even care. The thing is, the dog could have caused, not only been killed himself going back and forth through traffic, but, you know, the potential for causing a serious, if not fatal, accident is huge. Now, everybody talks about spay and neuter and licensing, but think about your automobile. It has to be registered, and that hooks you to the vehicle both financially and legally. Microchipping should be mandatory, not just for returning the pet home, but to put you on the hook to be responsible, because if your animal gets out and it causes an accident or an injury, then it can be traced back to you as the owner, and then maybe that will make people realize there will be consequences. And then let's just say, okay, now I don't want Fluffy or Fido anymore. I'm going to give it to somebody, or I'm going to sell it, or whatever. Right? Again, like car registration, once you transfer, it should be mandated that you have to transfer over the information. Okay? I don't think that's a big deal to ask to make it mandated, and then cooperative, a co-op with every vet and any other kind of agency that has anything to do with animals, so they can scan it and make sure that thing is microchipped. Now, microchip happens, you know, at the
10 seconds.
Okay, so anyway, they do microchipping, but it's not mandated. That's what I propose, that it should be mandated.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Any other public presentations? All righty then. That closes public presentations. Next, staff announcements and reports. Report.
We could bring that up in the subcommittee. I know we chatted about it before, but...
Good evening. Nick Coleman, Director of County Animal Services. First and foremost, I just wanted to say that we have a... it's not our event, but we're participating in an adoption event this Sunday. It's called Strut Your Mutt. It was organized by the Bakersfield Positive Change folks. It's at the Old Town Chapel. It's at 601 Nile Street. I don't have a flyer or anything like that, but hopefully most of us know about it. Sunday, May 19th from 12 to 5. There's going to be a bunch of organizations out there adopting animals. And there's going to be, like, I think some firefighters and police officers and animal patrol officers that are going to be walking the runway with adoptable dogs.
They're going to be strutting.
They're going to be strutting. Tickets are available. I believe you have to purchase tickets for it. The website they're being sold at is ticketleap.com, T-I-C-K-E-T-L-E-A-P. And the venue name is Bakersfield Positive. So if anybody's free on Sunday, it sounds like a really cool event. And that, like I said, that was not, we didn't put that together, but community members put that together, which I'd love to see. Just some highlights from the director's report. Rescue placed 240 animals in the month of April. Our foster program currently has 469 total animals in foster care. 204 animals were placed from foster in the month of April. That's usually because it's kitten season. Our foster team is kind of kicking into overdrive. Our TNR program has produced 8,591 total TNR cats since inception, mid-2013. We had a very large Heritage Park vaccination clinic, 189 rabies vaccinations, 190 licenses, 19 microchips, 190 DHPPs, so it was successful. Heritage Park is usually a massive clinic. Adoptions are still going strong. 224 animals were adopted in the month of April. 1,423 total animals adopted as of in April. Four cats in the month of April. Commissioner Blackburn will be happy to see that. We adopted four cats in the Echo locations. We had a few events in the month of April. We've been really taking an effort, especially here of late, of participating in organizing off-site adoption events, especially to showcase and place animals that maybe are otherwise a little bit more difficult to place just because they don't show well in the kennel. Volunteers are still producing in the month of April. 2,973 total hours were donated by volunteers. I always like to see that that's equivalent to 17 staff members in the month of April.
Amazing.
Yeah. Calls for field services in the month of April, 1,201 total calls. Liz Keogh is here. She'll be, again, either happy or dismayed, depending on how you look at it, that the northeast side of town, 294 total calls for service. 9 dogs returned to the owners in the field, 35 dogs secured on property. We're always trying to improve that that number of animals that were returned to the owner in the field so that they never get caught. That concludes the director's report. Thank you for your time.
I just had a question. I was wondering how you guys are doing as far as park over here, because we're having a lot of interest.
I don't have statistics for you. I do know that, you know, we don't see it as commonly as we have in years past. Like I said, Dr. Wilson created a parvo isolation ward to treat parvo, and she was largely successful in treating some of the parvo clients that we had. But we haven't seen too much, not nearly as many as we have in the past.
Okay, that's good.
But we live in a parvo endemic area. It's always going to be an issue. We deal with the same thing with distemper and ringworm.
Dr. Cole? Director Cullen, you alluded to Petco. We placed 4 there in April, and I said that we're getting more and more over there on a regular basis. I was over there on Sunday, and the cubbies were pretty full. So they've got a manager over there, by the name of Cassandra, I keep talking about, and she's really a ball of fire. She's really, really good. And she is willing to, you know, she'll do whatever it takes to place these cats. There was one cat in particular I want you to know about. I told Nick about it. My name is Olive, and it spent 3 weeks over there by itself. And then the cat was picked back up, brought back to the shelter, and Petco said, no, we want to place it. And so it was taken back out there, spent 3 more weeks, and they said, we are determined to find a home for this cat. And they placed it about a week and a half ago, and I sent them the photos. So it's an example of a Petco in particular, and Cassandra going above and beyond the call of duty to try to make every animal really matter to people. So congratulations to them. So I expect for our report next month is probably going to be 16. There's going to be quadruple whatever this is, because they're really working hard on adopting and doing whatever it takes to make it happen. I have a couple of observations. I know it's cat season. The intakes were down from this time last year by 122, but I noticed the euthanasia was up by 40. Can you give me any thoughts on that?
On the increase in euthanasia by 40 cats?
Yeah.
I can't. It's more than likely they're underage kittens.
Underage, yeah. And you're right about that, because I did notice on the underage part, we went from 60 to 75, a 25% increase. The one thing I'm really pleased with, I don't know how many 400, on the foster part, you have 469 animals. I don't know what normal is. I don't know what it's been the last couple of years. I'd ask you to give me some kind of trend, because I don't really know how that compares, but that seems like a lot of dogs or a lot of animals in foster care. I think it's great that you've got so many people that are willing to step forward. And in the month of April alone, 204 entered the foster program. That's phenomenal. I think that's a piece of the no-kill model that has been kind of lacking and that you're really stepping up on. So I'm glad to see that. That's all my comments. Thank you.
Okay, we have a question.
I know you told me before, I can't remember. So the, like, Wasco, the county, the outlying areas on the chart are, what are they under? Like, Wasco, Delano, Arden, Lamont.
Which chart?
Like, the field services.
The calls for service? Wasco, Delano, that's usually the North County area.
Okay.
And part of the North County area. And then, like, Taft,
Arvin, Lamont.
Yeah, Arvin is going to be in southeast, the unincorporated areas of Arvin.
Okay.
And then the Taft area also includes like Fraser Park and Quebec and Mountain Community.
Off Taft is
in the
third, but okay.
And Terry.
Button Willow is also included in North County. Yeah.
Okay. Terry Cohen, Tashby. When is the cat nursery going to open? Because you said last month it wasn't open yet. And wouldn't that help with the neonate kittens that are coming in? The too young to adopt out? That's the whole reason for it, right?
Yes, it's open. It's been open for...
Three weeks.
But to say open, like we don't have doors open where the public can come in.
No, not the public, but if you have an increase, like I said, an increase in too young to sell out kittens, and we have that cat nursery, wasn't the reason for it to put the underage kittens in there, let them grow until they become cute and, adoptable, I hate that word, and then, you can take them back to the public shelter and sell them?
So yes, the nursery cares for cats between the ages of 3 and 6 weeks. We can't care for cats at the nursery under that, 3 weeks of age. Those are bottle babies. We don't have the ability to care for them around the clock. And then on top of that, we don't, it's a case-by-case basis which animals can qualify for the nursery. I mean, if we get in so many cats, we prefer the 3 to 6 week age cats that are healthy. So if they come in and they have PPIs and they're upper respiratory, it's kind of a case-by-case basis. If they come in under 3 weeks of age and we don't have a bottle of foster, we don't have a venue for us to get them cared for.
Okay.
But we our intent through the nursery is to save 300 cats this year, just through the nursery. And that, again, that's between 3 and 6 weeks of age.
Okay.
I got one last follow-up. Regarding the cat nursery, is this an off-site facility, or is that something on your property, or is this something you can talk about?
No, it's an off-site building.
It was off-site up until yesterday.
Okay, really?
Yeah, we brought it on in-house.
Okay.
It was just logistically very difficult to
get
staff out there and medical, and it was difficult. So it's in-house now. A lot of times we just kind of shoehorn holding areas into cubbies and closets and stuff like that.
It's called innovation.
Yeah,
shelters. It's called a facility that is not an animal shelter in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
Do you have challenges?
You think you're saving about 300 animals with this?
That's our intent.
That's your intent.
That's what we want to try to do.
Okay. That sounds really good.
I did want to touch on, I know there was a lot of questions about isolation and what's available at the shelter. So, you know, I think there's a lot of potential right now for, because our lease was up at Fruitvale last year, and the county had renewed the lease at the Fruitvale location for, I think, 2 years, 1 year at a time, that I think there's a lot of thought being put into, okay, where's home forever, you know, and whether or not Fruitvale is that location. So it is just a discussion right now, but it's a good discussion to have to determine, you know, what kind of investment the county's going to make in an animal shelter. You know, is it going to be at Fruitvale forever? And if so, what kind of improvements do we need to make to the facility so that we can provide the best resources to the community and the animals? Or do we look at, you know, purchasing and building a new facility? And what would that cost? And what would that time frame look like? So very early stages of sort of talking about that. So I think there's some potential. We're not talking about tomorrow, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 years down the road. We could be looking at some incremental improvements at the housing at the shelter or potentially a new location. So there are discussions to have. So I think even if, you know, our space is limited right now, you know, we've certainly begun the conversation about what the potential for a forever home for animal services is.
How many acres do you guys have out there?
What?
How many acres do you want?
The property is 2.2 acres or something like that.
Yeah.
But I think all buildings combined is like 10,000 square feet.
And you're outgrowing it?
We outgrew it 4 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that facility makes it very difficult to provide daily care.
Well, I'd like to hear more about whenever you're ready to talk about if they're thinking about having a new facility somewhere else, maybe somewhere a little more simply located or something bigger.
Like stick around about 5 years and I might be able to.
Do what?
I said stick around about 5 years and maybe.
5 years? We'll keep renewing the lease?
It's at my hand. So, like I said, it's just a conversation about is Fruitvale the forever location for current animal services? So, yeah, it's a good conversation.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. All right. Next is the ordinance. First, I need a motion to receive and file.
I'll make a motion.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Now, subcommittee.
Okay. So, just an update on the subcommittee. We did meet today, as we have every month. November is the only month we didn't meet. Nothing has been presented, obviously, to the commission as of yet. As a group, we've come to some agreement on some things and on other things not so much. What was presented today is that one of the subcommittee members had brought forth some recommended language for a breeding permit or sort of an addition to the existing breeding permit that would change the language and the requirements. So the homework that the committee members had was to go home and come back next month with whether they agree on that language or do we need to make some revisions or do we just take a vote and say yay or nay. But the other thing that we will probably be moving forward next month is to take a look at everything that we've kind of come up with the language for to date. And decide whether or not, and I got to get with Jerry about that, decide whether or not we can take what has been agreed upon and send that to the commission for a vote and then send it to the board for a public hearing. So, you know, I think we've been doing this since September. So just to put it in perspective.
Jerry, is that a problem? Because it just seems like there has to be some forward motion going on and there has been some things that have been agreed upon. If we wait to have the whole thing revised, it's going to be a while. This was not supposed to be a permanent committee.
I think it would be preferable to take it all at once, but there's no reason you can't split it into pieces.
I just think it makes sense. It just feels like more forward motion, and you can just, you know, get that off the plate and continue on with what we're still discussing. So it'll go to you and then here and then supervisors. Is that how?
Well, yeah, the commission would make a recommendation to the supervisors. And then if the supervisors approve the ordinance changes, it would come back to county council and get drafted and noticed and all the other procedural things that we have to do.
That's why I think because it's such a long run-up, we start with the smaller things that we are agreed upon and start get it rolling. So.
Well, that's up to you. From a legal perspective, you can do it both ways.
That's something some of the committee members actually asked that today. So it's good that you...
How's
that?
Okay.
Yeah, we got together.
Oh, cool. Awesome.
Anything else on the subcommittee?
Will it still have to go out to public meetings like before?
Yeah, I think any ordinance change has to have a public hearing, correct, Jerry?
Yes, it would be a public hearing, but it wouldn't be... Probably would not be like before. It would be a public hearing on the ordinance before the board.
At the time.
And I think you have to do it twice.
Okay. All right. What was the next thing?
Okay, and then the last thing is the spay neuter funds update. That would be blank, so we need to receive and file
on here. The spay neuter funds update, so there's a few things of note. Blake had, and I wish Liz was here, Blake had applied for, so if you all remember, I'm just guessing, I think it was 10 or 15, maybe even 20 years ago, the state of California started selling spay and neuter license plates. Mm-hmm. And originally that was supposed to, the money from the proceeds for those license plates was supposed to go into sort of a fund, and then that fund was supposed to be distributed to animal welfare agencies to promote spay and neuter, which was actually new spay and neuter. For some reason they just kept the money in. Didn't disperse it. I think last year they finally made the decision to disperse those funds through a grant process. Blake put a grant application together, and we were approved for, I think, a $46,000 grant.
Oh, nice.
Just under $46,000.
We asked for $50,000, and they gave us $46,000 and change. I don't know why. It's like an odd number. But, in concept, what we talked about applying that to is the Save the Pities vouchers to make sure that we have funding to continue those next year. And then alternately, I think 3 years in a row now, we've applied for a CDFA, California Department of Food and Agriculture grant for $15,000 to, again, support spay and neuter. So we had applied for that at the same time as the license plate grant, and we were granted $15,000.
Now, this time we got
$7,500.
Yeah.
So they gave us
they half. Cut us this time. But so we got the 46 plus 7,500.
So that is a blessing because we'll be able to continue the Save the Pities program at least through next fiscal year. We'll see what it does for us. But spay neuter funds, you know, we're trying to do some calculations right now to figure out, okay, do we have enough funding to last us through the end of the year so that we don't have to stop issuing vouchers? And I think that's the last thing we want to do. So we're trying to get down to the nuts and bolts of how many are still outstanding, how many are typically redeemed, which vouchers are still out there, to really make a determination whether or not we can continue to the end of the fiscal year. And it was at some point, probably in June, when we could possibly start, assuming that some of those redemptions of the vouchers will be redeemed after this fiscal year. So we have a lot of sort of putting our heads together to figure out what kind of funding we have left through for the remainder of the year. But I should be able to either myself or Blake provide a report next month to let us know where we're at.
All right. And did you get involved at all in the Gavin Newsom funds? There's this very short window, and it may have been just for rescues. Did you hear about that? It was only like there for a week. It was a chunk of money for lots of different things, but it may have not fallen into the government.
I did hear about that. I don't know that it applied to municipalities, but I did hear about it. No, we didn't.
It was such a short window that I don't
think it. Then again, the state just gave us $50,000. I can't
believe it. I always ask for more.
Anything else about the
venue? I was going to ask about. So the vouchers that I just wanted clarification. So Olive Drive Vet, I had to go in there to pay for somebody's dog. And the receptionist was talking to me about how when people come in, they have the Save the Pities vouchers, but they're being charged $20 at the shelter. And I said, I don't think that's true. through. So I just kind of was wondering what the, because are they not on the list? Is maybe that's why? Is it because they're choosing vets that aren't on the list? Or is it, is once that voucher goes with them, that's supposed to be a free voucher, right?
So there's two different vouchers. There's the regular low-income voucher and then the Save the Pities voucher. The regular low-income voucher does have a $20 copay.
Okay.
The Save the Pities voucher is no copay.
Okay.
So they might have that confused. Is Olive Drive on the list?
They are for low-income. I'm not sure they are for Save the Pities.
Okay. And they just may have a misunderstanding about it. Or sometimes, and again, I wasn't there for the conversation, sometimes vets will tack on an additional fee to accept those vouchers.
Well, I told her, I said, you know, because it was about, always telling everybody, do you have pit bulls? Because it's in Oilville. So I'm like, all pit bulls, you know, if you guys are counting, go get the vouchers and have them done for free. And she's like, that's weird, because we have some, and they're pit bulls. We just had a dog come in here yesterday, and it had the voucher, but they paid $20 for it. I'm like,
you just got a regular voucher then.
Yeah. So maybe it was their mistake.
Could be.
I just wasn't sure. You know, I was like, if they go, I need a voucher. Well, you have to say that it's for the pit bull program.
Right.
If you've got pits. Okay. And then the vouchers that aren't used, like say somebody doesn't renew them or whatever, can you get credit for that again and reuse that if it's over past a certain period of time? Or is it once that voucher is handed out, that money's gone?
So the only, if it's a copay and they pay the $20, yes, it's never redeemed. We kind of keep that cost, but we exhaust that funding every year, so
yeah.
We'd never have any of it left over, regardless of the $20 or not.
Okay, so people do redeem them all the time, then? So
not
I was
all
asking
the time.
If there's any residual ones, you can't reuse the vouchers?
I mean, if we had funding left over from those $20, yes, we could, but we'd never have any funding left over. And I think our redemption rate is somewhere around 80%.
It's 85% for the low-income vouchers, and it's about 70% for the Save the Pities.
So 85% of the vouchers that we issue, or 15%, don't get used.
Anybody else, Danny?
Good.
Might have been excused.
You may leave, sir. Okay, so if I could have a motion, first of all, to receive and file money for the ordinance change. Okay. Committee, do I have a second? Okay, all in favor? Any opposed? And then on the spay neuter report. Do I have a second? All in favor? Any opposed? All right. Okay, on the commissioner announcements and report reports. Start at your end, Karen. Anything?
I want to go back to Petco because they're our best partner, and I've had enough number of conversations with Cassandra over there. They've got a couple of events each month, and these are incentivized, but the incentive is actually higher than what I really thought. I thought if you place 25 dogs on that day, the county would get $25. I think it's like if you place 5, you get something. And does anybody know the real numbers on that, Sally, anybody?
I don't off the top of my head.
But it's higher than what I thought it was.
Yeah, there's decent incentive, and we've been taking part in those.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we brought dogs out to a Petco event just this past weekend.
Yeah.
You're right, you did. So Cassandra wanted to make sure everybody knew that the incentive was a little higher than what I first said it was. So, and there's like 2 per month, I think is the deal. So, and that's really about it for me.
Thank you.
Let me see. The Central California Animal Disaster Team, Kern County Branch, had an orientation and emergency animal sheltering training in Kerndale. We had a decent turnout, not a lot, but a lot of eager people who want to help. So we're now moving out of Greater Tatchpole Valley into Kern River Valley, and then eventually up to Fraser Park. So it's a good thing people are interested. These are people who have been there during the Erskine Fire, know it's going to happen again. So hopefully we start a team down there.
Cool.
Yeah. One more comment on Petco. This deal about Olive the Cat was actually above and beyond. Nick suggested maybe somebody ought to do a social media deal on it, and I told the manager that it might happen. Who would do that?
We would. It has not been done yet.
You think it will happen?
I have a strong suspicion that it will happen.
That's good. I mean, to have a cat for 6 weeks and to be that determined, I think that they need to be recognized. So that's a great thing. Okay, good.
Can't you even just call the media and say, "Hey, I've got a warm, fuzzy story for you"? I mean, you don't have to do it.
Who? Are you talking about Gary?
Yeah.
Gary can call whoever he wants. I think what we talked about is, and it's my fault. I didn't forward it to Sally, but yeah, it was just put a Facebook post up because it was a good story. It was a cat that was at Petco for 6 weeks and got placed.
Reporters love the warm fuzzies.
Oh, yeah, totally.
They do. They pick and choose which warm and fuzzies they take advantage of, but yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And I did want to mention also, Danny does a really good thing with the dogs on Facebook.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does wonders for them.
He is their champion.
Yes.
Thanks, Danny.
Thank you.
I love the videos. Alrighty. That's it for commissioners. Okay. On to old business. We got none. And so then on to new business. We've got none. Which brings us to adjournment. Do I have a motion?
I make a motion.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All right. All in favor? Any opposed? Okay. Survivor it is.